Hello and welcome to the opening bell of Boxing News podcast. My name is Matt Christie, joined
by John Dennon. I can't believe you've forgotten who I am.
No, I was trying to think of something to say, but struggled. Right, it's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks since we were last recording a podcast.
I have an excuse while we were off air last week.
What is your excuse?
I've been ill.
Of course. Of course
you have. You might have heard about it.
Yeah, and I suspect over the next half an hour we'll hear a cough or two from you.
Probably.
So if you've never heard a John Dennon cough, it really is something to treasure.
No human being has had a cold this bad and survived.
You're doing well. Okay, so last time we spoke, it was we were getting excited about Frampton Quigg.
Yeah.
We were not sure which way it was going to go. We'd both made tentative picks for Frampton to win.
On points.
But I don't think we can claim any glory due to the lack of conviction in those predictions. But it didn't really turn out to be the fight that we expected. I was ringside. I found the atmosphere absolutely incredible. Incidentally, for anybody that read my report where I mentioned that my ear popped as a consequence of the noise, it's still not right, my ear. I've been told that it will sort itself out. Now, it feels like you've got a lot of water in it, and now and again it's kind of clearing, and you're shaking your head to try and clear it, but it's not quite clearing. I'm now at that stage, and I'm told that's basically my ear healing itself and sorting itself out.
So who are you going to sue?
Well, let's see. I mean, I'm told it could take up to a month before my ear is back to normal. But anyway, I'm optimistic about that. So atmosphere was something else. It really, really was. You sensed something very, very special was about to happen. And it didn't. I was enthralled throughout, simply because I was kind of waiting for this fight to break out, which I would say did about round 9.
Yeah.
I think if that had been round 2 or 3 when they started to fight like that, we would have a completely different opinion of the fight. Frampton, I thought, was excellent throughout. Even when he was under the cosh late on, I thought he did what he needed to do. But it wasn't the fight that we expected. People have since put the blame onto Scott Quigg's tactics. Is that fair?
From the outside, it did look curious. It did seem like Scott Quigg got going too late, and when he did get going in the ninth round, it became a good fight. And it seemed early on, when you thought you'd have been using his size to go forward and put pressure on Frampton, that he was backing off and not doing much, and almost it seemed like he was giving rounds away, because he was backing off, but he wasn't really outboxing Frampton from the outside. But then it's not like Carl Frampton tore into him. You know, Carl Frampton didn't have to do much to win some of the early rounds, and so didn't do much. It was all about getting the result and not about, a fight for the ages.
But, I mean, there wasn't a lot of controversy. I spoke to Joe Gallagher on the night and a few days after the fight, and he kind of felt that, and I think Quigg felt as well, that those early rounds were very close, and that even though Frampton may have been throwing jabs, they were not landing. To me at ringside, it looked like there was no, even though they were close, even though Frampton may have only been landing one punch and Quigg landed none, to me there seemed to be no question in my mind that the rounds that Frampton won in that early section of the fight, he won without question.
Yeah, I mean, I was just watching on TV in a pub, and so I actually did think overall it was a close fight, but like I said, I wasn't watching it like you would be if you're reporting on it. And, you know, my brain may have been clouded by a few Pepsis that I'd had. So, at the end, I actually thought it was a close fight because those early rounds I wasn't too sure.
So after your Pepsi-fueled session, were you certain at the end of 12 that Frampton had won? Or would you have been surprised if they'd have said that Quigg had got it?
I wouldn't have been surprised. I actually thought it was a close fight. My feeling was Frampton had won it, but I thought it was close.
Yeah.
But that, you know,
what,
it was late by then.
There's kind of in the, I feel that Scott Quigg showed a hell of a lot of himself in those later rounds too, irrespective of when the broken jaw occurred. Without question, the broken jaw did occur.
Yeah.
Sixth round, I would say, at the latest. It looked to me like it was the sixth, which was two or three rounds before he produced his best spell of the fight. What does that say about Scott Quigg, that he was producing that level of intensity, that level of effort with a broken jaw?
Yeah, well, it shows what a warrior he is, that he didn't, you know, he didn't know he was injured until after the fight. He didn't give away any clues, you know, even between rounds when the camera was on him, so you can see up close, he looked like, you know, he didn't look like he was even breathing that heavily as well. You know, so it does show how tough he is, what a warrior he is. But, you know, I suppose he is only 27. I think he'll be kicking himself for his, you know, for his approach, for just not stepping it up sooner, not going all out attack from, you know, from the halfway stage. You know, but it is easy to say that in hindsight, because, you know, maybe if you think it's close to start off with, maybe you're being a bit too careful about giving away a round to really make sure that you go out there and win it.
Scott Quigg's jaw was broken, but it was Carl Frampton's fists that did the breaking. Has Carl Frampton's performance been underrated as a consequence of the disappointment?
I hope not. He seems to have got a lot of praise for doing what he needed to do. He deserved that praise too. Because just sort of technically, he looked very good. You know, Scott Quigg's arms were quite wide, and Frampton was getting uppercuts like straight through. He did look good, Frampton, but I'm not sure he would have come out of that convincing people that he could beat Rigondo or something like that, which may be a sort of explosive knockout, which admittedly was unlikely, would have done.
There was, I mean, the anticipation and the expectation would be a better word, the expectation that fight would deliver resulted in us really thinking that, you know, kind of more or less whatever happens is going to be a return. That is now not really on the cards. Perhaps down the line, it could happen if Quigg can get himself back into a position. And I think he'll go on. I think he'll learn from this.
Yeah.
I think, as you say, he's still young. And I think this defeat, the nature of the defeat, certainly did disgrace himself, is perhaps a blessing in disguise for Quigg in his future. But what would be... I mean, there's talk of Santa Cruz next for Carl Frampton. Frampton still, against the wishes of Barry McGuigan, still wants Rigondo. What would be the ideal steps for Frampton?
I mean, Santa Cruz does make sense. A sort of relatively big name in America, you know, TV friendly style. He comes for, he chucks a lot of punches, doesn't he? You know, I still think fighting Rigondo would be, you know, he's the best in the super bantamweight division, and it would make sense. But then Rigondo and his management team have got themselves in a terrible mess. You know, they're not even fighting Jazza Dickens in Liverpool.
We'll talk about that shortly. Going back to Frampton Quigg, it was a letdown, unfortunately, if we're honest. If you compare it to our expectation, should we be concerned that very few of these events that are built up to this level are actually delivering on the expectation?
I suppose if you look back at the recent pay-per-view events we've had in Britain, what have we had? We've had Mayweather-Pacquiao, which a lot of people are disappointed by. I don't think it was the worst thing that had ever happened, but it was what is widely viewed as being a dud.
Yeah.
Then you had a Joshua stacked, Yeah, you had Kell Brook, Frankie Gavin with Joshua on it.
Which was a decent night's boxing one. It was a really good night's boxing, in fairness.
It was actually a really good night until the nominal main event.
Yeah, yeah.
Which again fell a bit flat, so that wasn't great.
Fury Klitschko,
I found it mesmerising, but it wasn't exactly a war for the ages. Weirdly enough, Joshua Dillon White, the fight which people see as least deserving of being pay-per-view, because it was a British title fight, not a world title fight, it's probably the most exciting out of the bunch. But yeah, it is. Broadly, the good thing about pay-per-view is at least you get these big fights happening, and then, you know, I still think the publicity drive around them is good for boxing, because, you know, the Sky and the people backing them make the effort to get the word out to non-boxing fans to try and make them a big event. So I think that promotional push is good. It's just a shame that some of these fights haven't been that great.
Is it affecting fighters' performances, though, this promotional drive? I agree that it is a kind of a necessary evil today to kind of build that exposure, but you could certainly argue that they affected Scott Quigg's performance in those early rounds, in that probably him and Joe Gallagher were a little preoccupied with not giving those rounds away as opposed to winning them. Also, I mean, Anthony Joshua, in a kind of opposite way, you could say it affected his performance because he was so hell-bent on destroying Dillian White.
Yeah.
There isn't really a solution to it. I think from a promoter's perspective, if they're giving us the fights that we want to see, okay, Joshua White wasn't exactly on the top of everybody's wish list, but the grudge made it an interesting one. But if they're delivering the fights you want to see, like Mayweather Pacquiao, like Quigg Frampton, we can't blame the promoters for the fight not turning out as he was supposed to, can we?
Yeah, because you can't, you know, you just can't guarantee. I mean, with Frampton Quigg, I thought you could guarantee it was going to be an exciting fight.
Yeah, I did.
I thought it had everything going for it. So I suppose the lesson there is just, you know, you can't guarantee something, you know, that it's going to be an immense event. But, yeah, I don't think you can ask for much more than as long as if it makes the fights that people want to see. I suppose that's all you can ask for. And, you know, in the case of Fury, he resisted the pressure to make it an exciting fight by doing exactly what he needed to do to win,
yeah,
which was backing off and yeah, not getting engaged yeah with Klitschko. You know, and that was still, because he was such an underdog, that was still a huge result and a huge event, even if it wasn't exactly World War III.
Yeah. I think out of all the ones we've mentioned, all the pay-per-view ones, I think in terms of what happened during the fight, that would be the one that was least affected. The fighters were least affected by the platform, by the level yeah of exposure. I think that would have happened if they'd have been fighting at Bethnal Green. That fight would have panned out. I'm not convinced with the others that that's what would have happened. Another one, probably the next, Canelo Khan, we went along to the press conference. That's a fight that we're expecting will be a pretty huge one. It's one that people are saying that whatever happens, it's going to be entertaining.
We don't know who's going to broadcast.
No, we don't.
I think all the usual players are in the running for it.
It is an interesting fight. The press conference, which was open to the public, was a little surreal.
Extremely surreal. When David Hay and Scott Welch appeared with a
plant.
Yeah, with a pot plant to, I don't even know what was going on there.
Well, wasn't that being, that was presented to, was it presented to Mauricio Sulaiman?
I believe so.
And the instructions were to take it to Las Vegas. And was it not, are they not planting it in the arena?
Desert?
Are they not planting it in the new arena as a memento from Great Britain?
Let's hope they are. Let's hope their plants get in the middle of the ring.
I tell you what, people are going to flock to see that, like they do the Joe Louis statue at Caesar's Palace. Have the photograph taken with that pot plant. But I mean, did you know the perception of Canelo Khan is that generally is that it will be a good fight while it lasts, but ultimately Canelo will get on top and stop him. Khan was, as he always is, exceptionally confident. Do you? I mean, since you've been at that press conference, you've experienced a little bit. You've experienced Canelo. You've experienced and you've listened to Amir Khan. Do you have any more confidence in Amir Khan, or are you certain that Canelo Alvarez is going to win this fight?
I'm still certain Canelo is going to win. Yeah. I know Khan's taller, but just in person, like, you know, it's hard to tell, but Canelo just did seem broader, you know, more muscular, and I just think the bigger guy beats the smaller guy. And also, Canelo's a pretty good bigger guy.
And he's improving, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's really improving. He's improved a lot since the Floyd Mayweather fight, and he seems to have taken a lot from that fight.
Yeah.
He's learned a lot.
Yeah. Like, you know, the win over Cotto was a very, very good win. And, you know, I think it's going to be a case of Khan can make it interesting or difficult for him, could make it exciting if he, you know, if he piles in slinging loads of punches, but I just think, well, ultimately Canelo knows how to use his right and land that as a hard shot, and it's going to be hard to avoid that for 12 rounds.
It is, isn't it?
But Khan was adamant he could. He was adamant moving up all this weight. He could train harder than ever before. He was saying on paper you'd think you want to avoid someone like Canelo, but when he broke it down, he could see how he could win the fight. Yeah, that was everything he was saying. But Canelo certainly seemed completely confident and was relatively happy to talk about Golovkin as well. He was more forthcoming on whether he'd fight Golovkin next.
Yeah. Another press conference. Well, there's been two others of note. I wasn't at this one, you was at this one, the Chris Eubank, Nick Blackwell.
I was there.
Press conference. Now that's a really, really, really intriguing fight, isn't it? As domestic showdowns go, that's a good one.
Yeah. Because Eubank Jr., he's been getting some flack from, you know, a rival like Billy Joe Saunders saying, oh, if you're as good as you say you are, why aren't you fighting for a world title? You're just fighting for the British title. Which is a point, but you know, I think it's quite nice to see a really good British title fight like this. And I think Nick Blackwell's a real handful as well.
Do you give Nick Blackwell a shot?
Yeah, I do. I think he'll be there for 12 rounds. I think he'll make things very difficult. I think Chris Eubank Jr. has the edge in skill and has something a little bit extra. But Nick Blackwell is a really tough guy. I don't think he's going to wilt. And if he's still there, bringing, you know, just putting pressure on Eubank, this time around we could see Eubank struggling in the second half of a fight and sort of running out of ideas.
What do we make about the fact that Adam Booth was a one fight only deal, it seems? Although obviously that wasn't preordained. But I mean, what? Adam Booth is no longer working with Chris Eubank Jr. It was always an interesting move, but almost one that you felt was not going to work.
I mean, at the press conference, they didn't confirm that Adam Booth had left.
He has, though.
They said, yeah, that's news to us.
Yeah, no, he has gone.
I don't know, but the Eubanks seem to do everything their own way, seem to do everything differently, and seem to get on very well with each other in their own world, but certainly the promoters who have worked with them have said they find them difficult. So yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but whatever's working for the Eubank double act, it's makes for great copy, so I hope they keep doing it.
One of the promoters you talked about was Frank Warren, who's recently attempted to make a rematch with Billy Joe Saunders, and what does he call the Eubanks in this week's guest column? A little snippet for you, FOC. As for the Eubanks, they're nuts, they're complete idiots.
They're doing things their own way, though.
They do. I mean, I think Eddie Hearn hasn't been quite as severe with his assessment, but he said they're interesting. I think were his words, they're interesting to try and work with. Is there a danger that this whole... I mean, it's almost amusing, the fact that this father and son kind of act. But is there a danger that it could damage Eubank Jr.'s progress if they're just peeing everybody off?
I think, you know, so far we've been getting pretty good fights from him. Not Tony Jeter, obviously, but Spike. That was a good matchup and a good fight. I think Nick Blackwell is a good matchup and will be a good fight. But moving from different promoters and moving from different TV channels might make it difficult to plot a course towards a world title if you don't have the right promotional weight behind you to get there. It could be difficult. It could be difficult down the line, but he remains a big name. You know, like if you're James DeGale and Eubank Jr. is willing to move up to super middleweight, you'd not only be extremely confident you'd win the fight, but you know it would be a big fight because he's a big name. It's especially in Britain. If you fought Golovkin, that would be classic.
That would be classic. That really would be classic. So, Frank Warren says he tried to make the fight with Chris Eubank for Billy Joe Saunders. What he has made is a quite heavily criticised April 30th fight with Max Bursak, who, in all honesty, is not a contender. He's a gatekeeper. He's lost three of his last six. But, from Frank Warren's point of view, it's Saunders' first defence. It's kind of a stay busy fight. They're quite open about that, it seems. Is the criticism, though, deserved?
It's probably a little bit overblown. When I heard it was Max Bursak, I didn't think, oh my God, how dare they? Yeah, I mean, he won the world title in a tough fight, or is it, you know, a tricky fight. And if he's going to have a big fight in the summer, which he needs to have, then it sort of makes functional sense fighting someone like, you know, Bursak, who's... Do you have a controversial win over Nick Blackwell?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, controversial.
So it is sort of... Yeah, I suppose it is sort of comparable in that sense to the sort of Eubank Jr. and Nick Blackwell level of fight. And who, you know, Murray's moved up in weight. Who else, you know, other than Golovkin, who else is there for him to fight? Like, David Lemieux would be a really good opponent. I think that's a really good fight. But that would cost a lot of money to make. You know, so they need it in a big venue. And, like, if he's going to fight before the summer, it's going to be somewhere like Wembley Arena or the Copper Box where this is happening. So for the amount of money that's going to generate, you're not going to be able to afford an A-list name. I think Hassan Nadan and Gcam, some people thought it was going to be that. I think that would have been a better opponent.
That would have been a better opponent.
That would have been good, something like that.
Yeah.
Like a former world title challenger who's a bit, you know, who would be a bit of a handful, would have been a better fight. So outside of the Gcam, who would be good? Gabriel Rosado, you know, Billy Joe would win that.
Yeah, maybe. Elsewhere in the world of Frank Warren this week was news that Guillermo Rigondo will not be in Liverpool this week to take on Jazza Dickens, which was a huge blow, first and foremost, to Dickens, who must be devastated to say that his life is boxing, he's not putting it strong enough.
You spoke to him, you know how up he was for this fight.
He was so up for it. You know, a few weeks ago I spoke to him, I think a few days after it was announced. A little while ago now.
He's a good guy, Jazz. He's got such an interesting sort of background and life leading up to this moment, and fighting against Rigondo, both the best in the division, it would have been such a big fight. You know, it would have boosted Jazz's profile no end. And it must be maddening having, probably trained as hard as he ever has for anything, to then have it pulled from under him so close to the fight.
There was visa issues. Rigondo was in Russia. Couldn't get a visa, or someone in the team couldn't. There's some suggestion that it could be the trainer that was having issues. I see a lot flying around on Twitter that this is down to Frank Warren. This is Frank Warren's fault. This was all planned. This was just a ploy to get people to buy tickets, which from here is nonsense.
People have suspicious minds.
But at the same time, should more have been done this side to make sure that things like visas were in place or questions were asked sooner?
Yeah, because they knew he was in Russia. And it is foolish in the extreme on Rigondo's team's part to have gone over to Russia, realise he couldn't get a visa and all that kind of stuff. But then, given how important that fight was to boost this whole show, I suppose the Queensbury Promotions will be kicking themselves and fuming, and the show will take a hit on the box office as well, which will be sort of punishment. But so then they need to rub salt into the wound.
It must be infuriating, though, to have to chase things like this up when you're dealing with grown human beings who are not stupid, who know surely that they need a visa to get in the. For example, if you were, say, if I said to you, right, you're going out to America to cover a fight, and I know you don't need a visa, but I wouldn't think to say to you, oh, John, have you got your visa sorted? I'd just presume that a man of your intelligence would know that you'd need one. Do you know what I mean?
It's not
really a question that you think would need asking, because it's so obvious.
Especially if you're going over there for a job.
Yeah.
I don't know, when I went to Macau and I was stopping off in Shanghai, I suddenly had a panic when I realised I needed a Chinese visa.
But all is not lost. There is a main event going on, which I'm quite excited about it, actually. I'm going to be in Liverpool ringside to watch what Derry Matthews believes is his moment of destiny. It's his 50th fight after a roller coaster career, I think it's fair to say. It's his first true world title fight. I'm not inclined to count the interim title fight as a true world title fight, but the WBO, I think we can class in this day and age, as a true world title fight. He's, apart from Matthews himself, who I spoke to this week or last, who is convinced he's going to win. His team as well, spoke to his trainer, his team are convinced he's going to win. But outside of that, and the Derry Matthews diehards, of which there's plenty, but the general consensus is that Flanagan is just going to be too much for him. Do you give Derry Matthews a chance to upset the odds? Is there a fairy tale about to occur at the Echo Arena on Saturday night?
I think he's definitely got a chance. He seems in great shape. Look at his performances against Crawler, who is now a world,
exactly,
one of the major world titles. So you can't write Derry Matthews off. But I think Terry Flanagan's very tough to beat. I think he's quite skillful and actually hits quite hard. And, you know, Derry's a big puncher, but also is vulnerable. And has Derry been great against southpaws? I think he is Marsilia southpaw.
Yeah, he was. Or he is, yeah. And that was quite...
That was quite a tough fight for Derry. So I think Flanagan is very good southpaw. So yeah, I see Flanagan winning it. He might even be able to stop him before the end, but it could be quite a brutal, intense fight between, for as long as it lasts.
I mean, the thing is that people will be saying, and constantly will be saying, even if Derry Matthews is kind of taking a pounding, it'll be, oh, well, he can still do it, and they'll be referencing the Tommy Coyle miraculous shot and what have you. I think ultimately the fact that, for me anyway, the fact that Derry Matthews, after that horrendous run of form he had when he was in his mid-20s, that convinced him to retire, it was such a bad run of form, an early age for a boxer, and the fact that he's pulled himself back, I think he's lost a couple of times in his comeback, but the fact he's got as far to get a world title fight is fairy tale enough for me, and I think, you know, hat off to him, he's done fantastic to get this chance.
I remember when you started your campaign for Derry Matthews to get a world title fight, years ago it was.
it was at some point of stage two of his career, possibly around the time that he was fighting Anthony Crolla. But we mentioned that, I mean, that first, certainly though, you mentioned the Anthony Crolla fights, certainly the first one, it was very much a feeling that we've got now for this one. It was a case of Crolla was on the way up, Matthews, even then we were saying it had a hard career, and he's probably going to get stopped at some point. And then he dropped Crolla. I think Crolla was in control for the first few minutes of the fight, and then Crolla got dropped. So we can't write Derry Matthews off here, but I mean we can't forget as well that they have met before. Okay, it was over a three-round. It was over a three-round distance in Prize Fighter a few years ago.
I think Derry had been cut as well.
Derry had been cut.
So he had been having those cuts treated and wasn't warmed up, but, you know.
He struggled
against... I think I was covering that Prize Fighter for us.
You might well have done. You might well have. You used to like a Prize Fighter, didn't you?
Used to. I've had enough of them now.
Well, we haven't had any for a while, have we? We haven't had any for a while. So... Frank Warren again has been saying that he would like to see the winner in against Anthony Crolla. He's a little frustrated that Anthony Crolla has signed to fight Barroso. That would be a good fight, wouldn't it? Whoever wins this one, if Derry Matthews kind of really does turn in, the defining performance of his career and wins and surprises a lot of people. And then you've got a really, really appealing unification fight with Anthony Crolla in their third fight. Or if Flanagan does it and it's a Battle of Manchester, either way, whoever wins this one.
I think Crolla and Flanagan went to the same school.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So it would make, from looking at it purely as a boxing fan, as opposed to someone who's well aware of the complications and politics behind the scenes, that would be the next step, wouldn't it? If Crolla, and it's a big if Crolla could get past Barroso.
Yeah, that would be good. Like an all Manchester lightweight world title fight would be pretty mental. But, I know we're not meant to talk about the politics, but would it be big enough to bring together two rival promoters who have their fights on different broadcast platforms?
You'd hope so, but it's not. You wouldn't think it's at pay-per-view level, though, would you?
No.
Which is probably what it would take.
It'd be nice to live in a world where good fights weren't all on pay-per-view.
It would, and with that, I think really, really insightful observation. No, I'm not. I really like that. So we'll finish on that. Hopefully, we'll be back next. week. I see no reason why we can't
be. So much to talk about.
Where we'll, I'm sure, several ridiculous things will have happened in the world of boxing between now and then. But let's hope there's a good fight in Liverpool at the weekend to talk about too.
And get our teeth into prize at the Olympics potentially next week.
Yeah, let's do that next week.
Let's end on a cliffhanger now though.
Okie dokie. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, as always, for your support. Please do get involved in the magazine. If you haven't picked a copy up for a while, I'd really, really be keen for you to do that and to hear any feedback you've got. Loads going on in this issue. So let me know what you think. Take care, everyone, and have a good week.